Back in the mid-90s, I worked for a small biotechnology company. We manufactured diagnostic test kits to test people for infectious disease. And we have... You're going to make me fuck up. Yeah. We had recently been purchased by another company out of the northeastern United States, and we had about 15 employees, one of which was Mark, the previous owner who had stayed on, and the person that the new company had installed as our leader, George. George was 65 years old. He lived up in Massachusetts with his wife, and he had some grown kids throughout the country. He would fly down on Monday and fly back up on Thursday or Friday to be with her. He was a smart man. He had two PhDs. He had a long and successful career in the industry. He was about 6'4", 300 pounds, big guy. He was boisterous, jovial, arrogant man. Everything was always about George, and loudly. And one time he flew down here and arrived at the office drenched from head to toe in sweat and in a lot of pain. It started in his knee and moved its way up to his neck. Something was wrong, but why did he fly here? Why didn't he stay home and go to the doctor? But here he was, and he just deteriorated. He was just not getting any better. It just quickly became the focus of our jobs to take care of George, to make sure that he got to and from work and that he had food and drink and was comfortable. We did get him to see one doctor for one opinion, and we had this big company meeting one day. We're all in there. George and Mark are up there, and George says this doctor has taken some scans of his spinal column. And spinal column. And he thinks he has spinal cancer, and he's not going to live very long. It's horrible. And George is crying, and we're all upset. But wait a second. Why are we the first front in this battle? We all have our own dying family members to worry about. Where's your family? And it turns out that his wife was on some extended European vacation, and he did not want to bother her, and he didn't want to make his kids sad. So he wasn't going to tell them. Just us. We get to carry the weight of this thing. And so soon after that meeting, next to his desk appears this big reclining lazy boy chair that he had delivered from his apartment, because now, very rationally, George has decided he's going to move into the office. This is a business park in Columbia. There's nobody there at night except for George in his chair moaning. And at that point, the spectrum of things that we had to do for George had started to widen a little bit. I am washing his testicles in the office shower. And we're having to empty his bedpan. It's crazy, and this goes on for week after week, and no one believes that it is happening to us. We would call the parent company and say, George has moved into the office, and he's dying, and he won't go. Help! And they would say, can't be that bad. Get back to work. And one time it was my turn to put the salve on George's, and now for some reason very swollen foot. Normally George's foot was pretty big, but now it's fucking huge and bright red, and all the skin is peeling off the top. It looks like it's on fire, and I don't know what to do with a foot like that. Do you poke a little hole and let it dribble out slowly, or cut the whole thing open and let it pour into a bowl? I don't know. And so I look up at him and I say, George, that's gonna fall off. I don't know what to do here. I've not been trained to deal with this. Look, here's my training file. Nothing about a swollen foot. But I do know of a place where there are a lot of people that have the knowledge and the expertise to help you with your problems. Why don't you go to a hospital? I'll never forget. He says, Kevin, come closer, because I'm down by his foot. He can't speak loudly anymore, because every minor vibration from his vocal cord is sending waves of pain through his body. And I get up there and he says, Kevin, I will not go to a hospital because people get sick in hospitals. And it kind of threw me off a little. I wanted to state the obvious. George, you get any sicker, you are going to be dead. But I didn't say that because you want to be comforting to someone in that position. I just said something like, that sounds reasonable. You're the boss, keep paying me. And went back to putting the ointment on his foot. But so at that point, though, we just realized there was nothing we could do except wait for something terrible to happen. And lucky for us, about a week later, I come into work and I'm walking down this one hallway that leads directly to George's office. And as I'm getting closer, he's sprawled out on his chair and he looks worse than I'd ever seen him. Looks to me like he's no longer amongst the living. But I hear voices down the hall, so I go there and I find Pam, the head of research and development, and the ex-wife of Mark, previous owner, which is a different story. But she, I say to her, do we need to dispose of that body? And she said, no, he's not dead yet. But what had apparently happened was that the night before, remember, George is there by himself at night, he had wanted to do something other than sit on his chair. And in order to do that, he would need to get from the Lazy Boy to the office maneuvering vehicle, which is just one of those regular office chairs with wheels. And because that's what we pushed him around on. We weren't equipped to deal with a dying man on a daily basis. And so he, during that transition, he fell onto the floor. And sometimes you see that on those home video shows, and it's kind of funny, but this was not funny. It took him 2 hours to crawl from where he had landed to the desk where he could pull down the phone. And at this point, he was lying in a puddle of his own urine. And he gets the phone down, and you would think he would call 911. It's only three buttons, right? But no, he tries to call Mark, who is before there was a lot of available cable internet, and Mark was apparently using his dial-up to look at some internet pornography, and so he could not get through. And so he called Pam and says, Pam, I'm on the floor, get Mark and help. And she says, okay, George, we'll get help. Hung up the phone and dialed 911, then went over to Mark's house, had him put on some pants, and then they went to the facility where the paramedics had been there, they'd broken into the front door, and they run back to the office, and there's George on his chair. I guess the paramedic got there and found George on the floor and said, Jesus, we better get you to the hospital. And George said, just put me back on the chair. It's where I want to die, or something like that. And so the paramedics had come, but still George was there. But the fall hurt him badly, and he realized that he needed to go to the hospital for the drugs. And so he finally agreed to be shipped back off to Massachusetts, where his wife would take over, admit him to the hospital. He gets into the hospital. He did not have spinal cancer. He had a staph infection that, had he gone to the hospital 2 months ago, could have probably been easily treated. But instead, he needed bone grafts from his hips to his vertebrae, and he needed to wear a halo where they screw that stuff right into your skull, and then you can't move your head. For 3 months, he had to wear this. And he did recover entirely. He was fine. But we were held captive by this man's insanity and stubbornness. There is a little bit of an epilogue to this story, but I'm getting long here. So if you see me walking around somewhere and you want to know, ask me, I'll tell you. But let me leave you with two pieces of advice. If ever you get to the point where moving from one chair to another becomes a matter of life or death, and that is a new situation for you, go to the hospital. And try not to put your subordinates in that kind of predicament, because they might end up telling everybody right here. It's good storytelling. Thank you.